Well, hello again.
Hello. Hello.
Good morning.
I'm Mary. Let's see, where did we leave off last week? Yes. I was so worried about what people would think. I mean, what would you think if someone told you she was pregnant and she didn't know how it happened? Well, I don't mind telling you, I was scared. And I was scared for Joseph, too. So I threw some things in a straw sack, and I headed to my cousin's Elizabeth's in the countryside. Joseph would think it was odd, but he knew she'd been asking me to come see her, and my parents had been urging me to go, too, to be a girl for a little while longer before I married. Well, when I got there, to Elizabeth's, I mean, well, the incredible thing was she was pregnant. I mean, Elizabeth, a woman in her late 50s, much too old to have a baby. And as soon as she laid eyes upon me, she knew at once about my unborn child. I mean, there's no way she could have known by looking at me. Well, I'm only telling you because I think you should know. I know it sounds crazy. It was a miracle to me, too. Oh, those days in the countryside drifted by. Elizabeth and I spent hour upon hour in the garden together. We talked about everything under the sun, as women do, but mostly about our unborn children, about what they would be like, who they would become. And sometimes I would look up and Elizabeth's eyes would meet mine, and in her eyes I would see a touch of fear, the same fear mirrored in my own eyes. But then, through faith or hope or the solidarity of our connection, or perhaps the ritual of the morning prayers we had shared that day, somehow, together, we would always manage to find our way back to a place of deep peace. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us again, Mary. So Mary's story is actually written, and we've adapted it, but it was written by Dr. Cindy Acker, who happens to be the choir director at Unity Marin. Yeah, so we give thanks for those words. And I love that what Mary said as she told us that story about particularly this part where she talks about how she and Elizabeth share this moment of noticing fear in each other's eyes. You ever have that kind of experience with somebody at the same time, in the same place? And then what happens from that point that they're able to somehow find their way together to peace. How beautiful and precious those times are. And she says she gives some possibilities of, she doesn't know how it happened, but maybe it's because of their practice together, the ritual of morning prayers, or maybe it's the solidarity of their connection. But somehow, through their faith, through their hope, they find their way back to that reassurance that despite everything, all is well. And all is always well at that divine level, isn't it? Not always easy to remember, but when we have somebody who can reflect it back to us, it's really helpful. That's the kind of effect that these two have on each other. They can affirm the situation together, bless the situation together, and we too can do that for each other. In those moments, that's probably how you, in that scenario you might have just remembered, where you too felt some shared anxiety or fear or concern with someone and found your way back to that place of reassurance and peace and a sense that beneath it all is well. Whatever means we use to get there, could be humor too, by the way, that also can be a helpful way to shake ourselves out of those moments and kind of settle into a more peaceful place. But whatever it is that we do, it allows us to experience not just peace like we would on our own, but a double helping of peace. You know, it's like when Jesus talked about, wherever I am, wherever two or more are gathered, I am there in the midst of you. And so it's got that sweetness, that exponential experience when we are together in our spiritual experience, our moments, our times of traveling from one kind of space, at least emotionally, to another kind of space, spiritually and emotionally. So a lot of times when we talk about connection and companionship on the journey, we think about like-minded people, right? We like to be around like-minded people who have similar ideas and similar beliefs. It's comfortable. And that's great. I mean, we're in a room full of, I would say, probably like-minded people. But today I want to encourage us to go further and deeper to light-minded people who may or may not be like-minded. Because, you know, we're so versed in this in our world of categorizing ourselves and sorting ourselves into like-mindedness, similar ideologies, similar religious beliefs, similar political beliefs. And we see the problem that is creating in our world, right? As we continue to sort and separate ourselves regionally, physically, and otherwise, we begin to start to otherize, and we can see all the stuff that happens as a result of that. So it's an important time on our spiritual journey, collectively as well as individually, to recognize that looking for light doesn't always mean like. And that there are opportunities for us to make connections that might be beyond that kind of connection. Today I want to encourage us to find and discover light-minded soul companions to share this journey with, like Elizabeth and Mary, perhaps, or like the three amigos. Anybody ever hear of the three amigos? A couple of you have, yeah. The three amigos are a Presbyterian minister, a Jewish rabbi, and a Muslim imam. I promise they're not walking into a bar. I'm not about to tell a story. Joke. They may have walked into a bar together. I do not know. But they're delightful, these three guys. And they became interfaith friends. And they realized how inspirational their friendship were, especially as three clergy of their various religions. And so they literally took it on the road. You know how we joke about, you know, take it on the road. It's a really good show. Well, they did, because their friendship was so inspirational to people. And I used to have a radio show called Soulstream, and I interviewed the three amigos. And I always remember just this one part of that interview that really stood out to me, is the Muslim imam, or the imam, said that being friends with these two guys of different religions made him a better Muslim. And isn't that true? When we have diverse connections with one another across our belief systems and so on, aren't we always asked then? I mean, sure, you've been asked by people of different religious persuasions or spiritual walks in your life, what's unity? And there you are going, oh, wait, oh, okay, I'm not with all my like-minded friends. I'm standing alone here as the representative for unity or new thought, and I need to explain it to somebody. And in our explanation, in our reliving of our experience and our recalling and our reflection, we become a better unitic. And it's all a part of what helps us on this journey. So I can think of some really lovely holy pairings. They're not always across various belief systems. That's just a part of one of the rich experiences that can happen. But I was thinking of St. Teresa of Avila and St. John of the Cross. Really amazing individuals. And, you know, you can imagine how St. Teresa of Avila was planting Carmelite orders and spiritually leading them in a time during the Spanish Inquisition. And so her sisters were having serious charges, you know, against them. And I imagine it was quite lonely at the top. in that, and they were dark times too in many ways. And along comes the priest, St. John of the Cross, as the confessor for the other nuns. And he is decades younger than St. Teresa. But they have the soul bond that is so profound that through all their challenges, I mean, she was plagued with mental illness at times, with physical illness, all kinds of things that she went through. He was imprisoned by his own brothers, the monks, for his own ideas. And so the two of them cast light for each other. And together they reformed the Carmelite order for both the brothers and the sisters through all these challenges that they experienced. And so it is also about casting light through the dark times for each other, that we can be that kind of light-minded soul companion. Do you have a desire to have someone like this? Somebody you can consult with and call upon, who's got your back, who can hold space for you, who can walk beside you and lift you up and sometimes stretch you? Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Maybe you have it already. So we're going to do a little bit more work with that later, but I do want to mention another holy pairing. Charles and Myrtle Fillmore are co-founders of Unity. They themselves, as husband and wife, were an amazing pair of soul of like-minded, light-minded soul companions. And they came together with that the shared ideas of what could be possible. And we stand here today because of the covenant that they made and kept with Spirit and each other to give of their time, their talents, their treasure, everything they had to Spirit, and that they would follow however they were guided. And here we stand today, so many years, 140 plus years, because of that companionship. Because of the light that they cast upon each other's paths and their path together and the collective path, so that we could have the largest group of new thought in the world that is still today gathering on Sunday mornings, gathering throughout weeks, gathering for social and spiritual companionship. It's pretty amazing stuff, isn't it? I give thanks for them. I remember when I worked at Silent Unity, and I would walk past their pictures and just have sometimes Myrtle talked to me, actually. But most of the time, it was just this feeling of deep appreciation for what they created, what they co-created, what everything they gave their lives to so that this could thrive and become what it wanted. And it wasn't what they imagined. They didn't imagine churches. They just thought they were, you know, going to write messages in their magazines, and they were going, and then eventually it became the prayer ministry, and they were going to hold space for people, and then they did some spiritual counseling, and then people just said, "What? No, we want our own groups. We want to gather across the country. We want to gather across the world." And so here we stand because of that. So if you think about people in your life or in our history that have touched you in that way, take a moment to give thanks for that companionship that allowed for something to be co-created that you get to benefit from, spiritually or and otherwise. In the story today, as it opens, Elizabeth and Mary find peace together in the midst of their prayer, or because of their prayer. Has anybody ever considered having a prayer partner, or maybe you have one? Anybody have one? Couple of you have one. Good for you. I've had the same prayer partner for 23 years. And we started praying together in person in Myrtle Fillmore's office every week. It was such a special energy to be in, and it was such a special experience. And we didn't know each other that well. She just asked me, "Would you consider being my prayer partner as I finished ministerial school?" I was working at Silent Unity, and I'd already graduated, and she still had a year. And 23 years later, we still regularly pray together. I cannot express how profound it is to have somebody walk beside you, to have your back, to light the way, to encourage you, to stretch you, to pray with you, to give it over in faith, to surrender with you, to see you at that level. And I want that for everybody. And I have really exciting news. She is an excellent speaker, and she's coming for 2 Sundays while I'm on sabbatical. So I hope you really enjoy her and feel the heart that I feel and have been so never judged, you know, always loved and accepted and lifted up by Darlene. If you don't have a prayer partner or someone like it and you want one, you could start out by praying with our prayer chaplains. They are all of our prayer partners, aren't they? And I give thanks for them so deeply. Even if people don't pray with them on a Sunday, I always tell them, you're here holding space. You're here making a difference. You're here creating an energy field for us. And they do that for us wherever they are here at Unity. So maybe if you've thought about it before, but you've been a little nervous about it, I encourage you just to reach out and have a prayer with them for a celebration or a challenge in your life. Or call up Silent Unity. That's the prayer partner for all of us, not just in Unity, but for the whole world. We have the world's largest prayer ministry, telephone prayer ministry in Unity. And you just dial up 1-800-NOW-PRAY, and somebody says, how may I pray with you today? Isn't that lovely? So we forget about it, I think, sometimes, some of us old-timers, but, and by that I just mean we've been around a while in Unity. But that's available to us always. But of course, those are one-way opportunities. And I want to call us also into the kind of prayer partnership where you're giving as you're receiving. So it's got that kind of equal footing of sharing with one another. And if that's what you want, just beginning to affirm and intend, just how we always co-create, right? Do those steps to begin to attract that into your life. Maybe that person is sitting right next to you today or across the room from you. And you just haven't sought it out yet, but as you put the feelers out, even energetically, they will come. Because whatever you're seeking is seeking you. So there might be some blocks. Has anybody ever tried to co-create something and you think, I am doing all the right stuff? I'm doing the affirmations, I'm, you know, meditating, I'm holding the space, I did a visioning board, I've got people holding it with me, and it just isn't happening. Anybody have that experience ever? Yeah, it's perplexing, isn't it? It's like, it seems like I'm doing this, I've been doing this work for decades, I know this. So here's some possible blocks in this particular intention to attract to us a light-minded soul companion. One is that we might be holding some judgments. We might be holding some limitations of who potentially we can gather to us because we're kind of stuck in that like-minded idea. So if we open the way up to say, oh no, it's light-minded, it could be anybody of a different ideology, it doesn't matter, I don't want to limit myself, I want to bring forth somebody who can share with me along this journey and maybe even bring gifts of diverse ideas to my doorstep. The second thing is that we can just close our hearts off, right? Because we're maybe a little afraid of rejection or we're fearful. And so we kind of put it out there, but then we close it up, you know, or we don't want to ask anybody because we're a little bit afraid. And so just to remember to stay open, that an open heart attracts another open heart. Rumi and Shams just demonstrate this beautifully. You might know Rumi, the Sufi poet. Not everybody knows his light-minded soul companion, Shams. In today's words, we would say they had a bromance. So Rumi, that poet that we know so well, and we know his poetry so well, it also was inspired by Shams. In fact, they say that when Shams made his transition, that Rumi's poetry embodied the spirit of Shams and became so much richer and more beautiful. Have you ever known that to happen with people that were very close to each other, that they suddenly took on the characteristics of someone else after they made their transition? Some of you are nodding. I remember Mike and Sarah Matoin, my first Unity ministry, Unity of Chicago, They were a husband and wife team. Mike was known for his humor. He was absolutely hilarious, and he was just really authentic guy. The first Sunday I was there, this man walks up the aisle in jeans and a sweatshirt with a big, you know, ring of keys that are jangling and tennis shoes on. And I thought, oh, I wonder, is that the custodian? I wonder if he's going to fix something on the stage. And he turned around and started speaking. And Sarah was much more, you know, she had her robes on and she was more serious, but she always had a depth of a message. And so between the two of them, they really just were so beautiful together. When Mike made his transition, the very first Sunday that Sarah spoke, she was absolutely hilarious. And from then on out, it's like as if Mike's humor was embodied through her and as her. So it's a beautiful thing when we have these close relationships that are spiritually focused and how much we can give to each other alive and even when we make our transition. Rumi said this, that kind of speaks to this idea of keeping the heart open. He says, friend, there's a window that opens from heart to heart. When houses live side by side with windows open, that's the embrace we want. A place where great souls can stop over and rest. So that third and final block is not limiting ourselves or playing small. You know, a lot of times when we're matching up with people or attracting people, we might think, oh, that person would never want to be my prayer partner or my soul companion or my soul friend, right? But stretch yourself to somebody who you admire, somebody who you think really has gone a distance on the spiritual path so that they can be a person who lifts you up into your magnificence so you can be that person in return for them and for others. St. Teresa of Avila, again, speaks of this. She wrote the mystical masterpiece, The Interior Castle. And in that, it's basically like you imagine kind of a spiral of what she's talking about that really is kind of similar to our Advent journey. Of the Advent journey being, of course, these four Sundays that move us to Christmas, this time of the revelation, the birth of the Christ consciousness again in us. And similarly, in St. Teresa's interior castle, there are seven dwellings or mansions that we move through with the idea that the seventh is the arrival in the center, the arrival in the center of the divine interior castle where we are one with the divine spirit. And each of these dwellings has meaning. In St. Teresa's explanation of the second dwelling, she speaks of this idea of light-minded soul companionship. She doesn't use those words, but this is specifically what she says in encouraging us to choose people who are walking ahead of us. She says it's a wonderful thing for the soul to connect with others who are walking the way that she is walking, who are not only sitting in the rooms that she enters, but who have also already ventured more deeply to the center. Conversations with these travelers will be of great benefit to the soul, so she can get close enough to them so that they may be able to take her with them. Has anybody ever seen the movie Good Will Hunting? A lot of you have seen it, yeah. So in that movie, Will and Chucky, you might remember, are best friends. Will is the main character of the movie. And they live in Boston. They lay bricks for a living. They drink beer with their friends for fun. And that's pretty much their life. And their imaginings for their future will be to have families and watch their children grow up in Little League like they played and have their children probably can follow in their footsteps and so on. But the difference is that Will, we have discovered, is a mathematical genius. A mathematical genius that's being sought out by professors really around the country once they find out just how smart he is. And he's fallen in love with a woman who's in college. But Will's afraid. He feels unworthy. And so he's trying to hide his light, and he's sabotaging his career path and his path toward being with this woman. but Chucky, a true friend. Now you can imagine what a sacrifice this is for Chucky, who dreams about having a life with his best friend there in Boston, but sees that there is something greater in his friend that is wanting to emerge, that his friend is being called to take risks and to get out of that familiar, comfortable life and to do the things that his soul has come to do. And what that good friend says is basically, get out of here. You need to get on with your journey. I can't provide to you what you the kind of support you need. You need, in other words, other light-minded soul companions to take you to the next level. And so these two guys who wrote Good Will Hunting are actually great friends as well. They co-wrote it. They co-starred in it. Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, you know those guys? Here's a picture of them. They won 2 Academy Awards for Good Will Hunting. And they were nominated, I think, for 9 of them. This was an absolute pie-in-the-sky dream come true for these guys, that they wrote this story that was about the kinds of guys that they grew up around and the place that they grew up around, and that it was that acclaimed and decorated that now they live their dreams in Hollywood, and they are still best friends. Ben Affleck said in an interview, "I don't know that it would have been possible for me alone doing this job in the world without somebody who I loved, who knew and loved me and had my back, who believed in me. This friendship has been essential and defining, so important to me and my life." Would you like one of these in your life? Yeah, of course we would. I invite you just to take a moment and to close your eyes and just let an image of a person arise in your heart who you think might be, it could be a friend, or somebody, a relationship you already have in your life, or somebody you're just getting to know or you've seen before. Just let that image arise in your heart of that person. And this just is an honest internal exercise. Is my soul enhanced by this relationship? Does this relationship support and encourage me to be a better me? Do I feel both held in compassion and stretched to grow spiritually? And finally, do I feel fulfilled in my giving to this person as well? In other words, is there a sense of balance and prosperous flow of giving and receiving between us? And now just giving thanks to this person in whatever way you wish, to bless them, whether you feel this is a match or not for you, to bless them in the way that they show up for you. When you're ready, coming back into this space. So if this is something you'd like to work with a little bit more, there's a more structured process available to you. We actually have a worksheet that our ushers have, so you can pick that up on your way out and work through that process, both to assess current relationships and to attract somebody new.
And I can't find it anywhere. I have looked all over, and it's really an important key.
Oh.
And I'm wondering if you have any idea where it might be.
Well, let me
see. It's the church key. I cannot lose the church key.
Oh, maybe it's under one of these.
I don't know.
This is where we found the matches earlier.
I know. Does anybody,
excuse us a second. Yeah.
This is really important. Sorry. I don't know.
I mean, this is just wide open, Danae. Are you sure you lost it here?
No. I lost it at home.
Why are we looking for it here, then?
Well, it's dark at my house. Here, there's a lot of light.
Get my feet up. There we go.
There we go.
That's based on an old Sufi tale called The Key of the Darkness. And I was telling it at 9:30, and I noticed Danae over here nodding, and I said to her, you know that story really well, don't you? She made it her own. Well, I was here as your companion to help you. No mistakes, right? So I love that story because, of course, we always want to hang out in the light, right? And even when we know what we are looking for is in the dark, we sometimes just still keep hanging out in the light. But the truth of this idea of this soul companion is there's somebody who understands that there are sometimes dark places that we have to go, right? That peace is not always found in the light. In fact, so often peace is found through the dark, in the dark, in places where there is war or conflict or struggle or discomfort. And so it's by going into those places and shining a light in those places that we find the keys to the next step in our spiritual journey. So your companion, your soul companions, will know this, and you will know it for them. We can't always walk beside somebody all the way into those dark places, because sometimes part of that journey is just our own. But we can hold space, we can pray, and walk to the closest border we can walk. And that's a part of what we offer each other in helping each other come to peace. That's really what Elizabeth and Mary experienced in their garden together. I feel like the words weren't spoken, but it was almost as if unspoken, they were saying to each other, you've got this. It's challenging. It's going to be challenging. You've got 9 more months of carrying this child and then everything that comes after that, and you can do it. I know that you can do it. I know that you're going to be okay. There was almost that kind of knowing when they came to peace together. And the truth about the story and this journey and the metaphor of Elizabeth and Mary is they're pregnant with possibility. They're carrying that possibility of what will be born, a new consciousness on earth, right? And that's what we are pregnant with too. Possibility. That's what Advent is all about. It's about carrying the possibility, the probability, the Christ within us, and all that can come from the revelation and the rebirth of that consciousness. So that's the gift that they offer us during this time. And that's the gift that we offer each other when we walk beside one another as light-minded soul companions. So let's affirm those people into our lives or affirm them up that are already in our lives as we say this together. I attract and walk beside light-minded soul companions on my spiritual journey. And so it is. And thank you all online who are listening and outside. Blessings.